Mixed Martial Arts Point of View podcast may not be suitable for all audiences. Viewer and listener discretion is advised. Purchase your tracks today.
What's happening, MMA community? Welcome to the inaugural episode of Mixed Martial Arts Point of View / Mixed Martial Arts POV / MMA Point of View / MMA POV podcast. Yes, I found four ways of identifying this show. Being in quarantine will do that to you. I am your host, Antoine Hoffman, also known as Ant. Joining me are my esteemed co-hosts. First, he is the captain of POV Network's flagship show, Wrestling POV Podcast. He is a veteran of our U.S. Army. We do thank you for your service. An independent wrestler, and he's a fan of mixed martial arts. Ladies and gentlemen, the one and only, Tony Diaz. Say hi to the people, Tony.
Wow. What an introduction, man. I never thought I'd be in the opposite end of that. What's going on, folks?
And finally, but certainly not least, he is one of the co-captains of the aforementioned flagship show, Wrestling POV. He's an independent wrestling manager who is also an enthusiast of mixed martial arts. Ladies and gentlemen, please allow me to present to you, Rick Serrano III.
Yes, sir! We are here, people. You don't understand. Long time coming. MMA fan over here. I love MMA. I love the world of professional wrestling. Why not bring our points of view over into the cage and get things going? Thank you so much, Ant, for having me and Tony be part of the inaugural episode of MMA POV.
Yeah.
Gentlemen, truth be told, I cannot thank you two enough for presenting the idea. Truly, we are excited about this and we are looking forward to giving you, the listeners and viewers, mixed martial arts from our perspective. So, first and foremost, before we actually dig into the meat of the show, I have to ask, how did each of you become fans of mixed martial arts? Rick, I'll start with you.
All right. Well, for me, actually, it came from my brother-in-law. He was huge into mixed martial arts, and we would have get-togethers every now and then, and he would have it playing on in the background, and he was just, like, describing everything to us, from BJ Penn to George St. Pierre, and describing all the movesets. And then I was a big professional wrestling fan, so I knew of MMA because of Ken Shamrock and stuff like that coming into the wrestling world. And my brother-in-law just got us into it, and then it just became like a poker night for us. All the guys getting together, watching UFC, watching Bellator, Strikeforce. And it just became a whole big fun thing. Fedor Emelianenko is what connected us and bonded us all. I mean, the emperor, man, the greatest of all time, the GOAT. That's definitely seeing what he did to people. Guys that were two times his height, his weight, and knocking them out cold and breaking, snapping arms and stuff like that. It was just definitely a bonding experience and a respect for the sport of mixed martial arts. Definitely one thing that's what brought me into this world of MMA.
Gotcha. Great background story, Rick. How about you, Tony?
Man, it's been since the beginning. And I know it shows my age, but, you know, on our other show, you know, I get teased about it a lot. But for MMA, though, you know, I mean, I've been, like I said, since the very first UFC, I remember watching it. I mean, for me, I thought this was like glorified wrestling, but they're actually nailing each other. Hey, hence the brawl for all. That's how I thought this was going to be like. But obviously no wrestlers were involved. You know, Ken Shamrock, I remember Hoist Gracie, you know, coming in with his gi on. And there was this one really big dude. And I was like, all right, this is something different. And then I started to continue watching it. And then there was a gap, though, where I didn't watch it because they were planning on banning MMA fight, cage fighting, they called it. You know, it wasn't, I don't think it was officially called UFC yet, but, you know, so I stopped watching for a while. Then I got really back into it when The Ultimate Fighter came back on. When The Ultimate Fighter, it just rejuvenated the whole UFC, MMA, cage fighting. And I've been a fan ever since, you know, and every pay-per-view, I'm making sure I'm watching every match. So, I'm still a little, not too brand new, and I still know who people are. I know what matches they are. You know, it's just, for me, it's like, you know, sometimes I get a little confused with the weight class, you know. Oh, you got to gain 5 pounds to fight in this weight class. And this, it's like, who cares, man? Just let them fight, you know. But that's just me. That's just me, but that's how I got into it.
Awesome, awesome. And it's funny that you mentioned the Ultimate Fighter, because that's exactly what drew me into the sport. It was summer of 2007. I'm sitting in a house, bored as all get out, just flipping through the channels, and I landed on Spike TV. And at that time, Spike TV was the broadcast partner of UFC. And it just so happens that at the moment that I tuned in, it was the Ultimate Fighter Season 2 finale. And the matchup was Rashad Evans and Brad Big Country Imus. Now, just to give you an idea, this was a final bout in the for the heavyweight division of the Ultimate Fighter. Now, Rashad Evans was, at the time, 5'11", 230 to 235 pounds, whereas with Brad Imus, he was every bit of 6'7", 260 pounds. So to see the contrast in size, that was the first thing that drew me in. And then, you know, hearing buzzes prior to this show of how fighters are utilizing their entire bodies as and limbs as weapons, you know, to fight their opponents. I wanted to see how it all played out. Because, you know, with boxing being the oldest combat sport in existence, or at least one of them, you know, I was interested in seeing how would this work when knees and kicks and elbows are utilized. And to see these two come together, do what they did, and for Rashad Evans to score a win, you know, it was David versus Goliath come to life. And so at that moment, after at the conclusion of the fight, not only was I completely drawn into the sport as a whole, but at that moment, Rashad Evans, you know, became my favorite fighter.
Well, they don't call him Sugar for nothing, man.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because it's performance.
Yo, you know, they only give Sugar to the guys that know how to fight. Yeah, you don't just walk around calling yourself Sugar unless you know how to fight. Cause you got to
you gotta back
it up. You got people calling you Sugar. Get out of here.
The best Sugar, Sugar Ray Leonard, man. One of the greatest.
Absolutely. Sugar Ray Robinson before him.
Yeah. Sugar Ray Robinson,
Sugar Shane Helms for you wrestling fans out there.
Stand back!
All right, gentlemen. So my next question for you, or better yet, not next question, but I guess just to kind of go into an intro or short of how this came together, you know, just to give our listeners some
background.
So it was the weekend of my birthday, actually, November 2017, there was a Bellator event in Happy Valley, Pennsylvania, home of the Penn State Lions, Nittany Lions, excuse me. And for whatever reason, on that given night, Penn State was anything but Happy Valley. I mean, the crowd was dead. They seemed to be uninterested. And what was unfortunate was that two of their own were actually participants on the card, which would include former UFC fighter Phil Davis. And so as I'm sitting there, you know, waiting for some sort of crowd engagement, I just hear these shouts of Wrestling POV Podcast, tune in. We're available on Spotify, YouTube, and iTunes, and Google Play. And so that sparked me to get involved and try to do whatever to liven up this crowd. And so I'm shouting, you know, shouting out my podcast, which at the time was Running Back Radio. And there seemed to be a synergy between me and this voice. And then we were able to put faces with the voices. We connected. As a result of the connection, I started following the POV Network product. Been a fan of Wrestling POV Podcast roughly since episode 99, 100, somewhere in that neighborhood. And next thing I know, out of nowhere, I'm presented this idea by these two gentlemen to go forth and bring to you all an MMA podcast. And here we are.
Yeah.
Anything you know, you'd like to answer?
Let me ask. So I was that voice. You know, I went there, my brother-in-law, my wife, a couple of friends, and we're watching these fights, and it's boring, bro. My voice literally is bouncing from one side of the arena to the other. The fighters can hear me. You know, it was that boring. Jesus. And I'm screaming, booing.
Well, it was really boring because you were texting me.
Yeah, I was doing it all.
That's how I know it was boring. My brother-in-law. I was like, damn, Rick must
like
be
I
bored.
Like I said, I'm one of those, like, obnoxious fans. I'm sorry. That's just who I am. My brother-in-law is just like, Rick, you have to respect the fighters. And I'm like, fuck that. They are terrible. This crowd sucks. All of a sudden, some guy in the next row over tells me to shut up. And I said, whoa. Whoa, me? You telling me to shut up? Oh, we about to have a rumble in the seats. So it just got crazy. And then my brother-in-law kindly reminded me, Rick, they allowed a carry in this state. So I was like, oh. All right, so maybe we're not gonna throw hands. We're good. We're good, brother. And then Ant is back behind me, backing me up, and then all of a sudden I'm like, I got a podcast. Why don't you subscribe? He's like, I got a podcast too. I said, all right, let's sign up right now. What was cool about that event though was Randy Couture was there and got an autograph from him, bobblehead doll. That was one of the most amazing experiences. You know, I got a picture with him with my wrestling POV shirt on and everything. but it was a great experience just meeting Ant and getting to know who he is as a person. And then we had the New York DC connection, NYDC. For those of you don't know, I'm in New York. Ant is in DC. Tony's in New Mexico. So it's just like we have this connection that goes across the whole country. And it was great knowing Ant, and when we was able to bring him on for Wrestling POV Global, because the guy's a literary genius. He look at the words that come out of this man's fingers is amazing.
Truly appreciate it.
Yeah, of course, man. And we wanted to see what he can do verbally, so we put him on Wrestling POV Global with TJ Logan and Elio Canella. And then, you know what? We said, you're always talking about MMA, man. Why don't you just do an MMA show for our network? And that's when we decided to do the show, and here we are. And
here we are. So, first episode.
Number one.
Styling and profile.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, now that you all have a background of how this whole thing together and how we all merged to bring forth this product, what we're going to do is go into our opening episode, which is Ground and Pound. And just to give you an idea of what Ground and Pound is, Ground and Pound will be our news segment where we touch on the most trending topics in the world of mixed martial arts. And I don't know what topic is trending more or is of higher priority than everything involving UFC 249, to the original structuring of it, to the revision of it, and then the ultimate cancellation. We're going to get into some other news matters involving John Bones Jones, Anthony Smith, Bellator related news. So we're just going to try to run the gambit of all things MMA related. So without further ado, I'm sorry, did you have something, Rick?
I was going to just say, for those of you that are new to MMA, Ground and Pound, it's basically when you're getting pounded out on the ground and someone's on top of you. That's the terminology they use. Ground and pound is when basically someone's on top of you and they're just pounding you out. And it is brutal. And that's what the news is. The news is never just a happy thing, man. It's brutal. It can be things from all different aspects of life. Cancellations, major upsets, doping. People that are taking drugs and failing tests and stuff like that. So it's the world we live in. And unfortunately, we're going to have some good news. We're going to have some bad news. And that's what the Ground and Pound segment's all about.
And having what we're going through today with all the coronavirus and things like that, you guys got nothing better to do than to sit down and just take a listen to MMA, okay? We know there's a lot of wrestling fans out there off of our network, and now we're doing an MMA show. It's part of the deal, folks. So if you don't know much about MMA, you're going to get educated on, okay? So just sit back, relax, enjoy what we're going to give you, which is a lot of content on MMA.
There it is, ladies and gentlemen. You've heard it. So without further ado, I think it's only right that we touch on the marquee of the original UFC 249, which is, to me, the most anticipated fight in UFC history, that being between lightweight champion Khabib Nurmagomedov and Mm-hmm. Number one contender, Tony Ferguson. So just to give you an idea of this history, originally they were supposed to fight December 2015. Unfortunately, Nurmagomedov suffered a rib injury. UFC then made a second attempt on April 2016, but Tony Ferguson suffered a lung injury and he had to pull out of the fight. Third try, March 2017, Khabib suffered an illness as a result of a weight cut that didn't go well for him. Then a fourth attempt was canceled on April 2018 as a result of Ferguson suffering a knee injury. And just to give you more detail on this knee injury, now, go ahead.
Didn't he still want it to fight? He still wanted to fight, right?
Yeah.
On that, when they needed, he, like, I guess from what I heard, I don't know how much true this is, but from what I heard was like he wanted to, like, he didn't tell anybody.
Yeah, he tried to keep
like, he told people not to, like he tried to keep it under wraps and was just I still want to go with this fight. So what does that tell you about Tony Ferguson?
At that point, three cancellations, you're just like, yo, let's just do this, man. I just want to go.
True.
3 years at that point.
Right.
Yeah.
What it does is builds the anticipation and the desire to fight. And to dig a little more into that specific injury, literally, UFC was a few days out from the actual night of the fight. This was the pre-fight press conference. Press conference ends. Tony goes to get up from the table. He trips over an audio cord at the press conference. And that's how the knee injury takes place. An absolute freak situation.
Yeah.
And finally, in most recent cancellation, as we all know, it was a result of the COVID-19 pandemic and miscommunication between UFC and Khabib. So, gentlemen, based on everything that we know about this fight thus far, let me start by asking, first and foremost, where do you all think everything went wrong the fifth time around? Now, I'll start with you, Tony.
Well, I mean, Khabib couldn't fly out of the country, you know? Yeah. So, I mean, that was one major part of it. And then two, Dana White was like going to do it at a private island and nobody was going to know where this was going to be at. And, you know, not to get off of this subject, but, you know, I found out today that Florida announced that WWE is an essential job place. So, I mean, it's like, all right, so here's these guys doing it for entertainment purposes. So is UFC in that same boat too? You know, could they still have done this fight? You know, I think if Khabib was still able to come into this country without the travel ban and everything else, I think they still would have went with this fight. Where it went wrong, it was just, I think all these were just happy accidents. And to make these fights fair, you know, because that's why I mentioned about Tony Ferguson still wanting to fight, keeping it a secret and telling his people, don't say shit about, you know, this and da da da. So for me, it's like, all right, Tony really wants this fight. Does Khabib really wants this fight? I'm going to stick to my own opinion about it as we go into further about this. But, you know, I just think, I don't know. I don't know, man. This thing is five times, man. I mean, how much longer are we going to wait? This fight's going to happen eventually. It's going to happen. And I can't wait for it to happen.
And I think when it finally does happen, it's going to have the connection that Floyd Mayweather and Manny Pacquiao had. It's going to make a lot of money for the UFC because people want it. You know, I'm just hoping that it's not too little too late because, you know, Father Time is undefeated. And as the aging process wears on, I mean, training for a fight is not easy. For those of you that don't know, it's one of the most difficult things. You're not eating certain foods. You're working out most of the time, most of the day. The training sessions can be very difficult. Guys get hurt in training. Guys get cut in training. A little cut can mess up your whole fight. And then you got Tony Ferguson and you got Khabib. Khabib's in Russia. You know, this is a, the difference between WWE and UFC is that UFC has international fighters from all over the world who train in different places. You know, Khabib is from Russia. He's just like, that's where he's comfortable training. So you got to respect that. Am I upset? Yeah, I mean, I wanted to see the fight. But this aspect in life, we have to understand, we have, as people, need to take care of one another. If I applaud Dana White. Yo, you bought an island, bro. Hope you can get the refund. I hope you got the receipt because it ain't happening. I applaud you for trying to make this fight still happen.
I think I think he's got 90 days to return it.
I mean, have a couple of margaritas on your island and chill out, and then on the 89th day, return it, chill. Bro. It sucks, but you know what? At the end of the day, we as people got to take care of one another. We're having the death toll in the U.S. alone is hovering up there. So we just got to look out best for our athletes and for our people. And remember, it's not just the fighters that are fighting. You got the trainers, you got the managers, you got agents, you got camera crew. It's like, it's a lot of people. We're not supposed to be gathering, but we're going to have a bunch of people. Three judges, a referee, Dana White, you know?
Yeah. And not only that, blood, you know, I mean, I don't know how much impact that has to do with the coronavirus, but you would think blood has a majority to do,
bodily
you know, with
in general,
getting infected or whatever, you know, bodily fluid in general. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. You know, so yeah, I think, I think a lot of people out there in the world is waiting to get back to normal. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Because, you know, I don't want to be this type of guy, but I'm going to be this type of guy anyway. It's your first show. We need something like this. But women out there needs to understand, this is why men love sports. You see, you know, seriously, look at what we're going through right now. Withdrawals. You know, I mean, Christ, freaking ESPN is showing replays, and they're even running out of ideas with that.
They're playing horse.
I mean, so... They're playing horse, exactly. Come on, man.
They're having
it's getting ridiculous.
NBA 2K tournaments as well.
Yeah. On the Yes Network, you know, they're doing the video game of their, you know, oh, today's matchup would have been this, but let's do it in a video game form, see who would win. I watch it.
Yeah.
So that's why sports is very important. But, you know, I mean, it's an all year round thing. You know, as a man, you know, you love sports and you look forward to these things, you know, and it's unfortunate, you know, I mean, we do got to do what we have to do. Yes. You know, most importantly, the people, we got to protect the people. Do what you got to do. Do the social distancing thing so we can get this pandemic over with and get back to our normal
lives. And just to throw a little controversy there. I'm going to say this. I think Tony Ferguson wins this fight. When it finally does happen,
I do too.
I think Tony Ferguson has a hell of a chance. First of all, when you're that ugly, that means you've been in a fight or two. I mean, when your ear,
you seen the size
when
of
your
ear
sticking out one side 2 feet long, I mean, you've been in a couple of fights. But seriously, Tony Ferguson got the game plan. I think he has the ground game. If he can get Khabib on the ground, I think Tony Ferguson takes this fight within 3 rounds. And that's just my POV about this whole thing.
No, I agree with you. When this fight does happen, I mean, even since the beginning, I was picking Tony Ferguson to win this fight. And I'm still going to pick Tony Ferguson to win this fight.
You guys.
When it happens.
Okay, so you two went a little ahead of me, but I'm glad we touched on this.
That's all right.
I want to get back to filling in a couple of holes in reference to the history of Khabib and Tony. Mm-hmm. I'm in a minority as well that Tony Ferguson will beat Khabib. And I say that because Khabib has never seen a striker of Tony's magnitude. Tony throws it all. Punches, elbows, knees, kicks. Even when he is on the bottom of a takedown position or a grounded position, Tony is active. He's throwing elbows. He's throwing punches. He's not one that is going to allow you to lay and pray on him, or he's not going to be in a stagnated position. And he hits hard. His last 7 fights, every opponent has been left bloodied. And when he and Khabib fight, trust and believe, Khabib will be the 8th consecutive opponent that Tony cuts open. And one thing a lot of people do not appreciate is Tony's grappling. A lot of people think he's just a striker. Not at all. He may not be a wrestler as Khabib would define wrestling, but Tony can indeed grapple. Tony can indeed take his opponent down. And I just don't think Khabib has ever faced an opponent that matches Tony's ferocity or intensity. So I hate to, you know, well, no, actually, I don't. I'm glad I'm going against the grain. All 3 of us are going against the grain.
Yo,
and it seems like we all agree that Tony will indeed be Khabib.
What a way to open up the show where everybody agrees.
That's how I'm about it. back to the actual history of the fight, just to give you guys an idea of where I think things went wrong, I would ultimately chalk it up to miscommunication. And I say that because on March 30th, Khabib had went on Instagram and went live and had explained why he was back in Russia. So there was a meeting with him, or I guess a teleconference with him and Tony, and so Dana White. And so Dana and UFC had confirmed in so many words that there's a 99.9% chance that the fight will take place in Abu Dhabi. So when Khabib got word, Khabib and his team flew to Abu Dhabi. When he got there, he learned that the borders were closed. So that's what called for Khabib to then return to Russia. He didn't initially fly to Russia. He went to Abu Dhabi first and figured, okay, we have a few weeks left. Let's set up fight camp there and go ahead and, you know, get prepared for this fight. Because a lot of people may not know, Khabib trains in two places. He trains here in the States at American Kickboxing Academy with, you know, Daniel DC Cormier and Luke Rockhold and guys with that camp. And then he has his own camp in Russia known as Fight Spirit Team MMA in Dagestan. That's his own personal camp. So he trains in two camps in preparation for fights. So, you know, because of the miscommunication, that's how he ended up back in Russia. And of course, with the borders being closed, he was unable to return to the States. Now, call me crazy, but with UFC being this multi-million dollar sports entertainment organization, one would think that that organization would have a travel department that would confirm exactly what the statuses are with the borders of potential fight locations. I think there was a mishap on Khabib's part because he was a little too anxious to go. There was a mishap on Dana White and UFC's part because they didn't give 100% certainty as to where the fight will take place. And I absolutely have to take my hat off to Dana White because he did admit that there was communication on all parts as to why, you know, Khabib ended up in Russia and it couldn't go anywhere.
Absolutely. I mean, what this whole pandemic thing is causing panic, and you're just like, what are we gonna do? All right, we gotta get this fight going. We gotta figure out, all right, we're gonna get Khabib to go here. You're gonna do this. You're gonna do that. And then all of a sudden, you're just like, wait, this is closed off. This is blocked off. And then all of a sudden, you start panicking. You're like, all right, what are we gonna do? This is the fifth time. Yeah. So it's just it's one of those things, man. It sucks. I mean, the audio cable, that's got to be the most egregious one out of all of them. They should have stopped that nonsense. That nonsense, that's probably the most frustrating one. I mean, they could make a Rocky series out of Rocky Khabib 4. That was the worst one. The audio cable took him out.
They'd have a fight.
It's all no. It's no fight. It's all the buildup. It's just the buildup to each match. Each match doesn't happen. Tony and Khabib 4. Oh my god, that audio cable, man. I can't believe it, man. We were so close, 2 days away.
A shocker. I didn't see that
Tony
coming.
Tony and Khabib 5. Coronavirus, the spread in this.
No, it'll be Cardi B popping out. Coronavirus. Right.
It's getting real. Damn,
didn't see that coming. Son of a bitch, you got us. Wow, these stories are good.
Okay, gentlemen, with everything that we have learned of the original structure of the main event of UFC 249, is this fight cursed?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, since 2015, come on, we're looking at 5 years.
You've canceled five times.
Now, I'm going to throw this question out there. Once this is over, you know, they have to go with this fight, right?
I believe.
And if so, when is it going to happen? When are they going to do this?
That actually segued into my final question. How should UFC proceed with this pairing? I absolutely believe that you have to go with another booking of this fight, and you have to continue booking this fight until it actually happens.
Until it happens.
It has to. Again, we're talking about the two best 155-pounders, not only in UFC, but arguably all of mixed martial arts. This, to me, is equivalent to having Ultimate Warrior and Hulk Hogan on your roster. You can't have two juggernauts on your roster and they not compete or combat one another in any way, shape, form, or fashion. It's just impossible to not do it unless God himself parts the sky and says this fight is not going to happen. You absolutely have to have Khabib and Tony go at it. I mean, both of them right now are on a 12-fight winning streak. Khabib being, if I'm not mistaken, 12-0 in his
I think it's 12-0, yeah.
Yeah, 12-0 in his entire tenure as a UFC fighter, and then Tony being on a 12-fight winning streak. They have to go at it.
What you don't want is for this fight to be one of the fights that's going to be a fantasy fight. You know what I'm saying? Oh, I wish we could have seen this, you know, before it's too late. They have to do this fight this year. They have to do it this year. You know, that don't wait till next year. No, it's got to be done this year. In my opinion, I think soon as this virus is done, okay, I'd say about 2-3 months max, they got to get this fight in. They do. You know, because like I said, you don't want this to be a fantasy match, you know? You don't want people playing a video game about it, you know? Oh, this is what would have happened.
I think the best way to handle this whole thing is Dana White gets on the phone with Vince McMahon and finds out how he can be essential. And just do that.
Well, he needs to put Donald Trump in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, there you go. because you got to go down to Florida. Ask them to use the Performance Center. The Performance Center is based in Orlando, and that's where WWE has been having its events. For those of you that don't know, you could put an octagon in there. Listen, the Ultimate Fighter, they fought in front of zero fans. A lot of these guys, they know what it's like to fight in front of nobody for peanuts. You guys are going to be fighting for millions of dollars.
Well, the fighters were the fans.
You're going to be fighting for millions of dollars in front of no fans. You know how many pay-per-view buys you're going to get? Like, everybody's going to tune in. Everybody's going to buy it.
Especially for
this
fight.
And you know what? It's no more grouping up and buying. It's going to be separate buys. So you're going to make a lot more money on pay-per-views because people are not going to be having 8-10 people in a house putting $5 down each. No, everybody's going to be dropping $60. Unless you know Tony's guy. Well,
you got to know my guy.
But at the end of the day, Dana White got to do this Vince McMahon thing, get essential, or use a performance center, have the fight there. This has to happen now. This is the big moment. People are desperate, and when people are desperate, they do stupid things. Yo, bump up the price to $75.
And it'll guarantee people to stay home.
Definitely.
It'll guarantee people to stay home, I tell you that much. Shoot. You know?
You know, and
just can't have a party, man, that's all.
We need our $1,200 checks. That's what we need, because there was a bar down the block. I was passing by with my mask on and everything, and they're selling margaritas. So I told my wife, I said, listen, they're selling margaritas to go. $40 for two. $40 for two. That dead serious, man. So
insane.
A lot of these companies and all these mom and pop shops saying support your mom and pop shops. Motherfucker, you charging me $40 for two margaritas? You know what? I'm going to Grubhub and screw you guys. But yeah, man, this is the money grab. If you're Dana White,
$40 for two damn margaritas.
If you're Dana White, this is a money grab. Jeez. Get this fight to happen. People will tune in because they are desperate, and desperation calls for big time pay. So you got to make it happen, Dana. Yep. Get it done.
I agree wholeheartedly, but unfortunately, Dana White has another hurdle that he has to overcome before UFC can actually, you know, get back to business as usual. And so let's move forward and talk about the UFC 249 timeline as a whole, which will eventually mention the hurdle that Dana White will have to overcome. So on December 13th, 2019, by way of Instagram, UFC announced UFC 249, which was booked for April 13th at Brooklyn's Barclays Center, which of course pitted Khabib and Tony against each other for the lightweight championship. January 20th, according to the Center of Disease Control Prevention, the first known case of COVID-19 was confirmed here in the United States as a result of a gentleman who had returned home in the state of Washington coming from Wuhan, China. January 31st, tickets for UFC 249 go on sale for spectators to purchase. March 1st, 2020, per the New York Times, New York Governor Andrew Cuomo confirmed the state's first reported case, noting that a woman contracted the virus while traveling to Iran. March 6th, UFC held its first pre-fight press conference, which took place, allowing for the two to have a verbal engagement and face off with one another for the fifth time. March 11th through 24th, we see an influx of sports postponements, which came from major entities, including Major League Baseball, the NBA, National Hockey League, NASCAR, and even the Olympics. On March the 16th, UFC had canceled three events leading up to UFC 249. However, UFC 249 remained intact in hopes that Tony and Khabib will finally take place. On March 12th, Donald Trump suspends travel from Europe to the U.S. in an effort to stifle the spread of COVID-19. In addition, Governor Cuomo issues an order restricting mass gatherings and sporting events due to COVID-19. UFC Dana White had announced in a letter to employees, which was also released for public consumption, that UFC 249 will continue as planned, with a change of location to be determined. We've already discussed what happened when Khabib returned to Russia, which was March the 30th. On April 7th, Dana White confirmed that UFC will still commence without Khabib and had plugged in Justin Gaethje as Khabib's replacement to fight Tony Ferguson for the interim lightweight championship at the Tacky Palace Casino Resort, which is located in Lemoore, California. Now, the interesting part of that specific location is that it's a tribal island, and it's not subjected to the state's stay-at-home order, nor is it subjected to the sanctioning of California State Athletic Commission. Then, of course, April 9th, 2020, and here's where the hurdle came in. Concerned with the potential transmission of COVID-19 by way of combat sports, California Governor Gavin Newsom, along with other state officials, expressed some concerns to Disney, who is the parent company of UFC's television or broadcast partner, ESPN, which ultimately led to the cancellation of UFC 249 and future events until the pandemic passes.
So you're saying Mickey Mouse shut everything down?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Mickey Mouse was just like, well, what do you know? I want to pull the plug. You know what?
Jesus.
You know, I heard you say Cuomo a couple of times. He's our New York State governor. Yes. Him and Mayor de Blasio, they're going back and forth. We're about to have an ultimate fight on the streets of New York with those two.
Exactly.
So, I mean, that's a fight I would like to see. Because those guys, they're going back and forth talking about you don't know your place.
I don't know. After Cuomo revealing that he's got nipple piercings, I think he's going to take on de Blasio.
I mean, he's a bad mother effer, but de Blasio got the height advantage on him. But in seriousness, look at that.
Does he?
But look at that.
So for those who may not know, what is the back and forth about between those two?
All right, so Cuomo basically is the governor. He runs New York State. And we got de Blasio, who's the mayor of New York City. He's basically just trying to stand his ground and shut down schools in New York City. And Cuomo's like, you don't got the power to do that. Like, you're the mayor of New York City, but we got the whole state. We got everything going, man. Like, we got to talk to Pennsylvania. We got to talk to Connecticut. We got to talk to New Jersey before we shut shit down. Yeah. And de Blasio's just like, all right, my bad. But they've been squabbling for years about... And Cuomo, he's for me, my POV, he's always done the right thing by New York State, but he does have an ego. He has this little power trip going where he's like, I'm the governor, you're the mayor, relax, all right? So that's what's the whole little thing going back and forth. I'm definitely invested in the schools closing. I'm a school teacher, so it's definitely something I'm interested in. So when I get an email from our union saying, oh, de Blasio shut the schools down, and then all of a sudden you get a follow-up email, Cuomo pulled the plug on that. That ain't going to happen. It's just like, it's crazy. It's a crazy situation. But like you said, that timeline that you had there, It's just crazy how fast this thing spread, man. It's scary. And listen, you can't blame Dana White. You can't blame the UFC. They tried, and they got bosses, and their bosses pulled the plug on it. That's just how it is.
Yep. Absolutely. I cannot agree more. I mean, if you think about it, Disney is a company that prides itself on having a clean image, being family-friendly and family-oriented. And the last thing they want is to be associated with an organization that is, I guess, being defiant and choosing to go or operate business as usual, knowing that there's a pandemic mm-hmm. out that threatens us all.
I mean, this is how safe Disney is being. The movie Splash with Tom Hanks and the mermaid, there's a scene where the mermaid's butt is shown. Disney Plus covered it up with like a fur, so her hair runs all the way past her butt. So you don't see it running into the water. So Disney is not having nudity. Is not having no spreading of the coronavirus. It ain't doing none of that. So Disney is being that, sucker, you ain't happening here. They don't want to see that. So
unreal.
Well, Disney clearly is making its position felt, and Disney is letting it be known that, you know, hey, listen, we're not playing with this pandemic. And COVID-19 has a way of shutting us all down and has made us, you know, pause for a while and collect ourselves and try to ride this wave until this thing passes. But there's one individual that COVID-19 has not been able to stop. And that, ladies and gentlemen, will be UFC light heavyweight champion John Bones Jones.
Johnny.
For those of you who may not be familiar, John Jones was arrested in New Mexico for aggravated DUI and negligent use of a firearm. In addition, he had an open container of alcohol in his vehicle. And there were even some reports that suggested he had crumbs of marijuana on his clothing. So for those of you who are familiar with Jones or may not even be familiar with him, he has a history of legal issues that involve vehicles, that involve drug use. I mean, he has a laundry list of legal infractions. And let me start by asking you, gentlemen, when you all heard about John Jones once again getting in trouble with the law, what were your initial thoughts?
For me, it was just,
man,
I just threw
my hands up.
I was going first.
No,
you want to fight?
No, you gave the story about Mary.
we can
do this right now.
Tony, you take it. We're gonna alternate since Rick went first last time. You take it.
Well, mine's just gonna be short and quick. When I first heard about it, I was just like, I just threw my hands up. I just threw my hands up. You know, I was just like, Jones, I like him. He's a damn good fighter, you know. And then he does this. It's like, you know. And he ain't but the thing of it is, he's not the first one. He's not the first athlete, I should say, to get into trouble. Okay, do they turn around? Can they turn around from this and lead the right way, or keep leading the wrong path into trouble and getting arrested and stuff like that? I don't know. He can, you know. It's just, like I said, all I did was just throw my hands up.
Listen, man, John Jones is a heartbreaker. Every time you believe in this man, he breaks your heart. This is about the third time he's in trouble, whether it be drugs, steroids, any kind of thing. It's just the man is a heartbreaker. I remember in March of 2011, I was at the Prudential Center in New Jersey, and I was there to watch Shogun Rua face off against John Bones Jones, this skinny, bony kid, going against the light heavyweight champion. It was supposed to be Sugar Rashad, but Sugar Rashad got hurt. That's how it is in the UFC, man. Next man up. And me and my one friend in this whole arena are going for John Jones. Everybody else in there going strong for the Brazilian, Shogun Rua, at that time, who was dominating the sport. As soon as the bell rang, John Jones hit this mofo with a knee on the opening bell. And three rounds later, he becomes the light heavyweight champion. And since then, he held that title. He lost it after the suspensions and stuff like that, but then he quickly won it back. The man has one loss, and it's a DQ because of 12-6 elbows. 12-6 elbows when you come from straight up and you go straight down with the elbow. John Jones lost. That's his only loss on his record. But he has a worse record when it comes to the police. Constantly getting arrested, constantly getting written up for DUIs. cocaine use, steroid use, and then, you know, I think enough is enough. This is the point where I can't support John Jones anymore because it's...
Yeah, but what else are we supposed to do? You know, not support him still. What if he gets into
This point? It's hard to support him. I can't. It's the third time, three strikes you're out for me. The guy just doesn't learn his lesson. There are plenty of fighters out there that want to be where he is, and he's up at top holding his belt hostage, and he's just doing stupid things after stupid things. First of all, the guy has been destroying the light heavyweight division. I think at this point he's just bored and he has nothing better to do. So he goes out, he drinks, he drives, he does stupid shit after stupid shit because he's bored. When you have opponents like Daniel Cormier, and I'm sorry, Daniel Cormier is a great heavyweight fighter, but he has no business going to light heavyweight facing Jon Jones. That guy, Jon Jones, has his number. All right. Daniel Cormier, he's not the face. You got to find a new face of the light heavyweight division, of the heavyweight division. Because at the end of the day, Jon Jones is a personality. And what does boxing and MMA and all these major sports have in common when it comes to heavyweights and the top guys? They have personality. Mike Tyson, Muhammad Ali, Evander Holyfield, Floyd Mayweather, all the tops of these things.
Yeah, but they never got in trouble.
Mike Tyson was a convicted rapist.
Oh, I didn't hear you say Mike Tyson.
Floyd Mayweather.
I heard Muhammad Ali.
Floyd Mayweather had tax problems. But the problem is they learn after strike one. You know, Jon Jones is a repeated offender. He doesn't learn. And at the end of the day, it's just more than one strike is too many. This is his third strike now. And I think it's time for Dana White to just give up on him. I know he risked giving him up to Bellator, but...
So what would be a proper punishment for him? I mean, you can't ban him from MMA.
I would ban him.
The guy still needs to make a living, you know? Because if he doesn't go to UFC, he can go to Bellator.
No, that's what I'm saying.
You know, if he doesn't go to Bellator, he can go to the new, where is it? It's I think it's in Mexico. It was Tito Ortiz.
Yeah, no, I know that.
There against, he can go there. He can go anywhere he
can,
wants.
But the,
you know, so what would be the proper punishment for him to understand and learn, dude, enough's enough. Stop, you know? Cause could it be? Could he have that attitude of, well, you know what? If USC suspends me, I can go here. If they try to suspend me, then I can go here. If they try, I can go. You know what I'm saying? What would be the proper punishment for him to understand and say, "Yo, you cannot be doing this because this is a career ender. It could change your career to where you can get no money."
For me, there are a couple of things. Go ahead.
Oh, for me, my POV about this whole thing is, UFC has to ban him from the company. If he goes to elsewhere, he's not going to make as much money going elsewhere. And if he does this elsewhere, he's going to get banned from there too. So my thing is you ban him from the UFC. It's over. I mean, I don't think people are going to want to deal with him. And if they do, he's going to fight a guy like Tito Ortiz, or he's going to fight another washed up opponent, destroy them. And people are not going to want to tune in to watch him beat up washed up fighters. Go ahead, Ant. What's your take on this?
So, if Jones were to, I guess, somehow leave UFC and go to another organization, it would be, for you wrestling fans out there, equivalent to Seth Rollins leaving WWE and going to TNA or AEW. UFC and WWE are parallel in that they are the juggernauts of their respective areas of expertise or their businesses. Jones, unfortunately, has had more than three run-ins with the law. When I say the dude has a laundry list, it dates back to 2011. There was a traffic stop back in November 2011 where he was driving with a suspended license. In May 2012, Jones was rewarded with a Bentley from the UFC as a result of his performance up to that point. And Jones had refused to take a sobriety test as a result of his inability to properly operate the vehicle, and that Bentley was towed. There was another incident in New Mexico where he had a hit and run involving a pregnant woman, ditched the scene on foot, came back to the scene of the hit and run because he was driving a rented vehicle, left the rental car documentation in the vehicle, but he came back to retrieve the marijuana that he left behind, plus some money and other things. So he even had another incident with the police in March 2016 where he referred to the police officer as a liar and a pig. Like, he has an array of legal issues. And what concerns me more than anything is that enough is not being done to let him know that this behavior is unacceptable. We've seen him serve probation. We've seen him serve a certain amount of hours of community service. We've seen him charge, you know, $500 in fines, and we've seen him in supposed drug rehab programs. And even looking at, you know, his most recent list of punishments, if you will, one of them was 96 hours of house arrest. That's laughable because guess what? As a result of COVID-19, we're all under some sort of house arrest. So what is being done to let Jones know that this behavior is unacceptable? Not only that, but where's the involvement of his coaches, his training partners? Where's Dana White as an executive of this brand, you know what I mean, that you're still growing? To, where's the enforcement on his behalf that says, okay, Jones, this behavior is unacceptable? Now, some people have made excuses for him saying, well, you got to realize UFC doesn't have a fighters union like the NFL has a players union or the NBA has a players union. But, I mean, somebody has got to make an executive decision to let Jones know that enough is enough. You can't keep doing this and thinking that you're untouchable. Yeah. Now, mind you, this is coming from someone that is a fan of Jones. This is coming from someone that enjoys watching him fight. So, seriously, I don't want to see him get banned, but there has to be some sort of penalties, some sort of enforcement, some sort of accountability that lets him know you can't keep functioning like this.
Yeah. And not to mention, he also got suspended after his Daniel Cormier knockout for doping. Yep. So, it's just... Yeah. Like, when is he going to learn? And he can't just always blame everybody else. At some point, you got to look in the mirror. I mean, you have two Super Bowl winning brothers in your life. You know, you have athletes in your family. You know, this is a family made of super athletes. And you are constantly being selfish and dragging your family name down because of these stupid mistakes. And you can't even call them mistakes anymore because you know what you're doing.
Yeah.
You're a multimillionaire. Why are you driving? And I never understood this about athletes when it came to driving. You don't need to drive. Get a driver. Have one of your boys drive you around. Be the sober person. Do all your drinking, all you want, and just get in the back seat. Yeah. Sit in the passenger seat. Just don't drive.
Especially when you've made it known on a few occasions to Ariel Helwani and other MMA media outlets that you like to drink, and there is no plan to stop anytime soon. You know who you are. You know what you like to do. Get someone to drive on your behalf so that you're not an endangerment to yourself or anyone else on the road.
Yeah, unfortunately, when people are like that, they're obviously alcoholics, you know, and there's really no changing their mind until something really tragic happens. And, you know, God forbid, you know, I don't ever want that on anybody, you know, including him, you know. And it might take something like that for him to freaking wake up and say, you know what, I think I need help, you know, because he won't recognize that he needs help if he always just constantly say to himself, well, no, I can have a drink, ain't gonna hurt me, one ain't gonna hurt me, because that's how all alcoholics think. One drink is not gonna hurt me, and then all of a sudden it turns into three, four, five, you know what I'm saying? So it's, you know, he's very talented, and what Rick just said is true. He's bringing that family name down, and it's unfortunate because he's very, very talented. Now, my question is, though, I mean, what would be a proper punishment for him? Because, like I said, you know, we touched on it that, you know, for wrestling, it's easy, you know. You can go to TNA, you can go to AEW, you can go to New Japan, you know, you know, I think WWE has a handful of blackballed wrestlers that will never step foot in WWE again, but they can still make money elsewhere. You know, the hottest thing out there right now is the indies, you know? So what would be something like that for, you know, Jones, John Jones? What would be an appropriate punishment for him? You can ban him, but he's still going to make money elsewhere.
Well,
and he could still do the same thing.
When it comes to fighters, don't they need specific licenses as well? Because I think this is when Vegas can step in and just take away his fighting license so that he can't fight anywhere. I don't know if that's the case, but if that is the case, I would take away his license altogether so he can't fight anywhere. But if I'm the UFC, I ban him. And people want to go to the UFC. They don't idolize and grow up saying, I want to go to Bellator. You know, they don't do that. Yeah. So UFC is the cat's meow. That's where you want to go. So fine. You know what? You're banned. You know, and you know what? You could make money elsewhere, but you're not going to make the money you could have made here. So that's my POV on it. It's just you got to.
Yeah. Well, if he was smart enough with his money and saved, yeah. You know, then. Yeah, you know, I can see him just doing a couple fights here and there, you know. But you still, I mean, there's always, when there's a will, there's a way, you know. He knows that his name means something, you know. So I mean, you can ban him all you want. He's gonna figure out a way to make money, you know. Either way,
indeed.
You know,
and then even looking at looking at his history of being stripped of his titles on 2 to 3 occasions. You may have to go the next level up where a state athletic commission bans him, you know, for an extended amount of time until the lesson finally registers and says, okay, I get it now. I can't do this anymore. I know Daniel Cormier, of all people, his biggest rival, said if there is to be a ban from any of the state athletic commissions, make sure it's not done so extensively that you leave Jones in an idle position to do more damage to himself.
Yeah.
Which I find to be an excellent point as well.
Sure. Yeah.
So moving on to other news items, just to give you a rundown of things that have happened over the last week. According to BJPenn.com, UFC light heavyweight contender and an opponent of Jones, Anthony Smith, and his family were victims of a home invasion last Sunday morning. It was around 4 a.m. when Smith's wife heard noise. Smith went to address the noise, and he described an altercation with the assailant as a life or death situation. It was later revealed that this gentleman is a former wrestler out of the state of Nebraska, 21-year-old Luke Haberman. And so the two were in an altercation, of course. They got physical, and Smith was able to overpower him and strike him and keep him incapacitated, if you will, until the police arrived. Mm-hmm. But Smith stated that this was definitely a drag out, tooth and nail kind of fight with this gentleman. And I know a lot of people trolled him on social media and, you know, questioning his ability to fight moving forward. But I mean, apparently this guy has a history of being able to hold his own as well. So
yeah,
what do you guys think of that?
I heard this story and I was petrified for the man. Just to imagine somebody being in your house with your family, with your kids and your wife, that would scare anybody straight. You don't know if the person has a knife or gun, any kind of weapon. You don't know if they're crazy. You don't know if they're rabid or whatever's going on. You don't know the situation. There's a certain sense of fear that overcomes a person. Going into a fight is a different mentality than fighting for your life. When you walk down those stairs and you see that person there, your body, the stuff inside your body, the fumes and everything is flowing differently. And it's a nervous action that takes over your body. So for people that troll this man, shame on you, because this is a life or death situation. You don't know what's happening. And the guy said it. Listen, I'm a professional fighter, and it took me a long time to subdue this man. I had to keep him down for 5 whole minutes, and I was not going to let him up. But it was definitely a drag-him-out brawl that went on. And I applaud him, man. Good for you. He's still ready for his fight. He mentioned, he's like, listen, I'm ready to go with my fight still. This is not going to stop me. And I hope he gets the help he needs. Because after a trauma like that, it may be good to talk to like a therapist or something just to make sure that you're okay mentally as well. Because it's more than just the physical aspect at that point, Tony.
No, I heard about it. I didn't know much about him. But I did heard about it. I tried looking up, you know, more information on him, but the only thing I knew is that he fought in Bellator, right?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
No, I'm sorry. Anthony Smith fights in the UFC.
He only had one fight, though, right?
Yeah, he's not, a big name in UFC as of, well, now he may be, because he's, yo, yeah, he listen, now. If I was him, I'd change my name to the Home Invader.
No. Jesus Christ.
But yeah, he listen, man. At the end of the day, Anybody trolling this man, shame on you, because in that situation, you don't know how you're going to act. It's fight or flight, and he decided to fight, and he defended his household, he defended his family, and he should be applauded for that.
I cannot agree with you more, Rick. And finally, in our Grinder Pound segment, we do have an unfortunate story to share with you all. Bellator men's flyweight contender Isaiah Chapman died Tuesday, April 7th. After
you know what? I thought that's who you were talking about.
No, no, he's okay. He's kind of into each other, right?
Yeah, I thought that's who you were talking about originally. My bad.
You're good.
Because I'm sitting there, I'm reading stuff up. Oh, Jesus. All right.
So Bellator men's flyweight contender Isaiah Chapman died Tuesday, April 7th after being shot multiple times outside of his home in Akron, Ohio. According to the Akron Beacon Journal, Akron police responded to a call at 9:40 p.m. regarding shots being fired. When police arrived, they found Chapman lying in the street with gunshot wounds. He was transported to a nearby hospital where he would later die. And the most unfortunate part about this story is he just made his Bellator debut October 2019. So he was only one fight into his Bellator career before this unfortunate incident happened.
That's why I asked him.
Yeah, this is where the whole, it's sad because it's just like there's people in society where you finally make it and the people from your past end up catching up to you, you know, it's those hateful people in this world that does not want to see people be successful, and want to see you get out of that lifestyle, and it's a damn shame. This is, and I know a lot of people out there, MMA fans, they support gun laws and stuff like that. And I think this is one of those situations where you have to review it. You have to review the state gun laws, especially in Ohio. There's a high death toll when it comes to gang violence and stuff like that. And I honestly just think, and hopefully people from Bellator show some support for this young man, because it's a damn shame that his life was taken from him and he just debuted. It's a big moment for him, and it sucks. So hopes and prayers go out to him and his family.
And then looking at
he was fighting for I think 10 years something like that, and he went pro in 2012. He went pro, and then I think he went 9-4 or something like that. That's unfortunate. That's, you know, I hate that. I hate hearing stories like that, especially when you're trying to do better for yourself. You know,
absolutely
unfortunate.
And then even looking at it from a human perspective, it's enough that we collectively are combating a disease that is claiming lives each and every day and altering families. And, you know, I just find myself wondering, how is it that we could still have it within us to want to take another person's life?
Yeah. And me.
Now, was he part of a gang? Is that what it was? Or used to be part of a gang?
My knowledge, I don't think so. Like, you know, I haven't seen anything in reference to any gang-related ties. I have to dig into it a little more. Oh. But my understanding is,
okay,
none.
Really? Now, he wasn't like, I don't, you know, like I said, I know about the story. I didn't like dig too deep into it, but I heard that he was like a case of mistaken identity too,
and that's
like he was the wrong person.
That's even more to my point, where gun control needs to be taken seriously,
because
people are dying by mistaken identity. People. And my bad if I made any implications that he was involved with gangs or anything. I'm just saying about how just basically coming from a certain lifestyle and then trying to do better for yourself. I'm just using that as an example.
But you know what though? I mean, you're right in a sense, Rick, because there is a lot of athletes out there that used to be gang members, and you know, when they do make it big, those gang members depend on that guy to bring them money still. You know what I'm saying? And then when the funds stop, then that's when all the bullshit happens, you know? So, you know, it's you know, it could have been. Who knows? But I did hear that it was a case of mistaken identity. But I could be wrong on that, too.
Could.
You know?
I mean, whether
it's especially happening in front of his house. It's like, come on, man.
Whether was a possible gang
tie. Two daughters.
Right. Very unfortunate. Whether it was a possible gang tie or whether it was somebody who knew somebody, or even like you said, Tony, just someone having a false sense of expectancy where, you know, because he's on the rise and he's on the come up, they expect to reap the benefits, you know, of his rise and his career trajectory. It's an unfortunate story. We're still waiting on, you know, further information to be clarified as to how this whole thing took place. But when it's all said and done, a life is lost for a horrible reason. All right, ladies and gentlemen, that will conclude our debut episode of Mixed Martial Arts Point of View Podcast. But please be sure to join us on next week as we will implement new segments into the show, which include This Week in Mixed Martial Arts History, our Mixed Martial Arts POV Vault, where we will enter Fight of the Year candidates, and our Mixed Martial Arts Point of View Pay-Per-View Points Game. Once again, this is your host, Ant, alongside Tony and Rick. We'll see you all next week. May God continue to smile upon each and every one of you.